In Washington, it's confirmation season on Capitol Hill as President-elect George W. Bush's cabinet nominees come face-to-face with sometimes friendly and sometimes unfriendly senators. NPR senior news analyst Daniel Shore looks back on past hearings to learn how the confirmation process has evolved since the earliest days of the Republic.
If John Ashcroft feels like someone who has run into a buzzsaw, he has lots of company. In a survey by the Brookings Institution and the Heritage Foundation of leaders in business, government, and academe, more than half criticized the appointments process as confusing and embarrassing. Last Thursday, Defense Secretary nominee Donald Rumsfeld complained about it to senators on the Armed Services Committee.
The process of getting confirmed is just unbelievable. I mean, I just hope each of you will have that opportunity someday.
Confirmation controversies fall into two general categories, official actions and personal behavior. And the personal is more likely to cause trouble than the official, although the two sometimes merge. Thus, Henry Dearborn, President Madison's nominee for Secretary of War in 1815, had to bow out under attack for his conduct as American Army commander in the War of 1812. Roger Taney, named as Treasury Secretary by President Jackson in 1834, was caught in a clash over abolishing the Bank of the United States. The first Senate rejection I covered was in 1959 when Louis Strauss, which was the way he pronounced Strauss, President Eisenhower's choice for Secretary of Commerce, was turned down for his record as Chairman of the Atomic Energy Commission and for general arrogance. It was again a personal matter when ex-Senator John Tower, nominated for defense by President Bush in 1989, was rejected by the Senate on evidence of drinking and womanizing. It was Sam Nunn, chairman of the Senate Armed Services Committee, who pulled the plug on his former colleague, despite the tradition that the Senate takes care of its own. It was a personal matter also when President Clinton in 1997 had to withdraw the nomination of Anthony Lake as CIA director after questions had been raised in the Senate about his personal finances. The Nannygate ogre reared its head in 1993, President Clinton giving up successively on Zoe Baird and then Kimber Wood for Attorney General over household employment of aliens. Retired Admiral Bobby Ray Inman, nominee for Defense Secretary, withdrew over a similar issue. The withdrawal last week of Linda Chavez, nominee for Labor Secretary, fell into the personal column. It was not because of her contested views on minimum wage or affirmative action, but because she had been less than forthcoming with the transition team and the FBI about her housing and assisting an illegal alien. By contrast, Roderick Page for Education, Donald Rumsfeld for Defense, sailed through their confirmation hearings, despite disagreement with some of their positions. Which brings us to Gail Norton, nominee for Interior, and ex-Senator John Ashcroft for Attorney General. Both of them will have to answer for earlier defense of the Civil War Confederacy, and Ashcroft for blocking the appointment of a black judge to the federal bench. The issue is not whether they espouse conservative positions unpopular with labor and liberals, but whether their ideological and religious attitudes are so determining as to disqualify them personally from office. Ashcroft's opponents, notably the Congressional Black Caucus, are trying to pin on him the word racist. It's become a tradition that the most effective way to oppose a nominee is to attack not the policy but the person. And we're likely to see that happening this week. This is Daniel Shore.